This is Health Yeah, your weekly update on what's going on in the health, wellness, and medical world with Monica Robbins.
It's a cancer that's largely on the decline in the U.S., except for some women. Talking about cervical cancer, there have been many developments in the fight against this type of cancer. However, a new report suggests some women are being left behind.
I had a cyst the size of a man's fist, and it was cancerous.
Doctors say cervical cancer is preventable, and when caught early, it is the most successfully treatable form of cancer. Now, there's a lot to break down ahead in this week's Prescription for Life. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Monica Robbins. Cervical cancer is cancer of the cells in the cervix, which is the lowest part of a woman's uterus. Now, this is a sneaky cancer because early stages typically have no symptoms. That's why routine pap smears are so important, along with HPV screenings, because the vast majority of cervical cancer is caused by HPV, or the human papilloma virus. Now, for women in their 20s, cervical cancer rates have dropped 65% between 2012 and 2019, likely because of the HPV vaccine that became available in 2006. However, according to the American Cancer Society, cervical cancer rates for women in their 30s and 40s have consistently gone up each year since 2012. Now, doctors say the best way to prevent cervical cancer is to keep up with your routine exams.
She said, "You have cancer," and I said, "Well, I just like froze."
Basically, that pap smear, you know, essentially saved her life.
And this is not just a woman issue. HPV can cause other types of cancer too. This is about taking control of your body. And before we get to our expert, Nikki Cry shares a story of a woman affected by cervical cancer and her life-saving advice.
Kathy Krepshaw loves grooming dogs. In fact, she has a dog grooming business called It's a Clip at her home in Elysburg.
He's a barker, a big time barker.
Kathy got a call from her doctor's office in October 2021, which she says wasn't uncommon since she grooms most of the staff's dogs. But that wasn't the reason for this call.
She said, "You have cancer." And I said, "Well, I just like froze. I couldn't understand anything. I couldn't hear anything else. All I heard was that C word."
Kathy had stage one cervical cancer. She was diagnosed after a routine pap smear at the age of 61.
Basically, that pap smear, you know, essentially saved her life, gave us the diagnosis, led her to me, and then she received appropriate treatment for her cancer.
Dr. Scott Purinton is chief of gynecologic oncology at Geisinger. He treated Kathy.
He told me that I had to, you know, have a total hysterectomy and have chemotherapy. He called it a sandwich treatment. Chemotherapy, radiation, and chemotherapy.
Current guidelines say women should start getting pap smears at the age of 21, but they may need pelvic exams before that.
A young woman, she comes in, she's 21, has a pap smear, and it's normal. She may not need to come back for 3 years, you know, if it was normal. If it's abnormal, then it gets triaged accordingly.
Kathy wants people to know how important pap smears are.
I have a lot of people at my age that said, "Oh, well, you know, I'm through kids, I'm this and that. I'm not doing that anymore." You need to have your pap test. You need to.
Kathy is now cancer-free and doing great. Nikki Cries, Newswatch 16.
A new study found there is a sharp rise in cases of cervical cancer among women in low-income communities. According to a University of Texas study, since 2007, cervical cancer rates rose 4.4% for white women in low-income areas, and cancer deaths are up 2.9% among black women since 2013. Now, the study also shows the need to improve access to screening and treatment in these communities. Danielle Wiggins shares more about why this diagnosis doesn't have to be a death sentence.
I had a cyst the size of a man's fist, and it was cancerous.
Andrea Mitchell is one of the 11,500 new cases of cervical cancer the CDC says are diagnosed each year.
And then that's when the projectile tears came, because it was like, what? You know, it's the last thing I ever thought of.
Mitchell was diagnosed in 2009. She was a single mom in her late 30s.
People hear cancer and they're afraid.
That fear? Understandable, especially for people of African descent. According to the National Library of Medicine, Black women are 41% more likely to develop cervical cancer than white women and are 75% more likely to die from it. In Ohio, the female breast cancer mortality rate is highest among Black women. And for Black men, they are over 2 times more likely to die from prostate cancer than white men.
Cancer does not always equal death. Early detection really does help to save lives.
So why are rates declining for some women and rising for others? Well, the reason may stem from screening guidelines to confusion over who should get the HPV vaccine. There's a lot to get to, so here's my conversation with our expert. Joining me now is Dr. Robert DiBernardo, who is the section head of the Department of Gynecologic Oncology at Cleveland Clinic. Thank you so much for being here.
Of course. My pleasure.
So much to talk about.
Tons.
Cervical cancer, though. Why are cases going up?
That's a great question. We are seeing that. And there's, I think, probably the rationale is 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, we changed our guidelines for screening. Used to be years ago, every woman gets a pap smear once a year, and we would find problems and detect them early. Now that we've understood really what causes cervical cancer and its relationship to the human papillomavirus, we don't really need to do pap tests every year if they're done properly. I think, though, as the guidelines have gotten more complex, it's just harder to stay compliant. Sometimes people need screening every 3 years or every 5 years, and it's really difficult to keep track of that. So then if we're missing those deadlines, then these precancers can develop and even into cancer. So I think part of it is a failure in our screening system. And I think, you know, we've seen for some reason also an increase in advanced cancers, and I don't know that we really understand why that's happening.
So this is a unique type of cancer because we have a screening test that actually detects it. And this was the first cancer to actually have a vaccine.
Correct.
That works. That vaccine has been out for several years now. Who should get it?
So I would tell you, for certain adolescents, both male and female. So what's interesting is we were able to create a vaccine because we know the majority of these cancers are driven by the human papillomavirus infection, and we have a vaccine targeted to those. So if we inoculate children before they're exposed, and you're exposed obviously with sexual activity, then we do a tremendous job of preventing cancer from developing. Some of the vaccines also prevent warts, which is also driven by HPV. So since we started that, we've actually expanded the guidelines, and now women even up to the age of 45 should and can get it. So,
what if they already have HPV?
I think it's still fine to get. So I would tell you, even beyond the age of 45, it's reasonable to give. Insurance companies, of course, won't pay for it until those guidelines change. So I would encourage everybody to get vaccinated. It's a simple series. Insurance is going to cover it. And honestly, why would we not? We've all gotten vaccinated for COVID and the flu. And how about not getting a cancer? HPV-related cancers are not just cervix. Anal cancer, vulvar cancer, head and neck cancers, some are HPV related. So it's good protection from all of those cancers.
How common is HPV?
Extremely. I would tell you every person who's been sexually active has probably been exposed at some point. And just like most viral infections, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know you picked it up. You wouldn't necessarily know you gave it to somebody. And for women, we could develop some precancer change in the cervix. And ultimately, even a cancer in the certain circumstances. So, fortunately, that infection is generally cleared by most women. Some women can't clear it. Why? We don't know. We know certainly smoking, promotes the growth of this virus and the incorporation into the cell. So, people that smoke are a little bit more likely to develop serious infection and even cancer down the road.
One of the great points you brought up, though, is that males can get that yes. HPV vaccine. Are we seeing a rise in head and neck cancer among men
too? We are, both men and women, but men primarily. And I think that's probably related to, you know, changing sexual practices and things like that. It's interesting, I'm not an expert obviously in head and neck cancers, but we treat those HPV related head and neck cancers differently than the ones that are not HPV related.
If you could shake every woman out there, what would you tell her to do?
First, take control of your life and your body. This is healthcare. Don't die of embarrassment. Go for a pap smear. I would tell you the old recommendations of having a pap smear once a year really make good sense. Whether or not we need to stick a little, you know, device in to collect cells from the cervix doesn't matter. So visit a gynecologist once a year. It's really smart. For somebody who's 18 years old and maybe starting to become sexually active, there's a lot of important things that we need to talk about, you know, birth control and all these other things. And if you're 85 years old and you're obviously in a different phase of your life, but maybe we talk about urinary incontinence or, you know, bleeding or anything. So I think we serve, that's what gynecologists do. They serve a very important purpose. And I think if we tell people, oh, you don't need a pap smear anymore, or you only need one only in 5 years, we're losing the opportunity to give women really the healthcare that they need.
You focus on gynecologic oncology, you know, ovarian cancer, cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. While cervical cancer, there's a test to find it. What about ovarian?
Yeah, so ovarian cancer is, you know, the silent disease. It's really not. ovarian cancer has many symptoms. It's the kind that we all experience, bloating, nausea, maybe some diarrhea, constipation. But none of the signs are terribly specific, like, oh my God, I'm having crushing chest pain. Maybe I'm having a heart attack. So it's very subtle. And until people generally have advanced disease that they're like, God, something's got to be wrong. I got to go to the ER. That's when we typically find that cancer.
And by then it's spread?
Yes. Typically we find it when it's advanced, so stage 3 or 4. Now, that being said, this is very treatable cancer. And even though people are, you know, really in some bad shape, we have really good therapies with chemo and surgery, and many, many people live normal, healthy lives after treatment.
But with cervical cancer, are there symptoms?
So yes and no. So what's interesting about cervix cancer is, since it's related to this viral infection, and that viral infection causes precancer change, it's estimated that that precancer change is going to take 5, maybe 10 years to turn into a cancer. So we have lots of opportunities to intervene then. So if we're getting a pap smear and the cells look abnormal, then we intervene and remove precancer, never has a chance to become cancer. So this is why cervix cancer is different. Now, when it does develop into a cancer, yes, people will start having symptoms, but the precancer stuff is relatively asymptomatic. People are not going to have funny bleeding or discharge or anything like that. Once we have a cancer develop, people will typically start with abnormal bleeding, typically bleeding after intercourse. Sometimes their menstrual periods will just kind of get a little wacky because there's no really rhyme or reason. People can sometimes develop pain. As the cancer grows, it'll start to cause problems, typically knocking off one of the kidneys. And so people can then end up with more advanced disease. They'll typically end up in kidney failure with infections and things. So people can get pretty sick from this cancer.
What's the treatment?
So it depends on the stage and how advanced. So precancers, super easy to treat. We usually do a small surgical procedure to remove the abnormal part of the cervix and then follow people closely. That's generally enough to cure people of the precancer. When we have an early cervix cancer, we can treat that surgically. Sometimes, you know, this happens in women who are in their late 20s or early 30s and they haven't completed childbearing. If we've caught this early enough, we can even preserve their fertility and still manage their cancer successfully. Radiation and chemotherapy, we combine the two, are typically used to treat more advanced disease, something that a surgery couldn't cure. And in those cases where it's already spread to, say, you know, lymph nodes outside the abdomen or to the lung or something, chemotherapy combined with immunotherapy has been really, really helpful and kind of a game changer.
How does it impact fertility?
So if you think about what the function of the cervix is, it's essentially the door between the uterus, where your baby is growing, and the world. So that has to open up when the time is right. So if we're developing a disease there that we're removing surgically, that is going to potentially weaken, so we can end up with scarring, so it's difficult to get pregnant, or incompetence, so once you're pregnant, as that pregnancy grows and that pressure increases, that cervix can open and we can have premature delivery. There are ways to mitigate some of those risks, but that's kind of the biggest risk factor.
Final thoughts. What do you want every woman to know?
Go get a pap smear, see a gynecologist once a year. And honestly, we talked a little bit about ovary cancer. Endometrial cancer is another really important cancer that I deal with. I mean, I think women need to recognize that it's not a complaint when you have a problem. It's an issue, and we should find doctors that can listen to us and evaluate us, because these are all curable cancers with the right care, especially when they're caught early.
Is HPV always present with cervical cancer?
Not always. There are we say about 99% of cervix cancers are HPV related. There's a subset that are not. They tend to be very rare, and they can behave a little bit differently. So for the most part, they're almost all HPV related. Those are the ones the pap smears are going to pick up and treatment with, leaps and cones and biopsies and things are going to be helpful for.
All right. Dr. DiBernardo, yeah. Thank you so much.
Oh my God, it's my pleasure chatting with you.
Some very important information there for all of us, men and women. Now, this next story is about a Texas mother who faced a stage 4 diagnosis. Kimberly Davis shares the mother's message and what she's learned about HPV.
I regret not going to my doctor regularly, because to be honest, going back, I really didn't do my paps regularly.
It's a place that can cause heart rates to accelerate and palms to sweat. But the doctor's office is also a place where problems can be caught, like the human papillomavirus, or HPV, before it progresses into cervical cancer.
I came to his office. He did his test. He called me the second day as well. And then he let me know it was cancer, and I was stage 4.
Juana Reyes was a new mother to a 1-month-old girl when she learned she had cervical cancer.
It's a newborn baby. You really don't want to get that radiation to your newborn baby. So sometimes I had to put layers of clothing.
It was a difficult decision to make, but one that saved her life. Juana had her ovaries removed and underwent chemo and radiation therapy. During the time Juana was diagnosed, she was unaware of the HPV vaccine.
It's important that the males also be vaccinated, because the infection goes back and forth between the partners, and so both men and women need to be vaccinated.
Juana's baby girl is now 7 years old. Her two eldest children are now vaccinated against HPV, and she's hoping others take that same preventative step. Kimberly Davis, KHOU 11 News.
That'll do it for this edition of Prescription for Life. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back next week with another dose. Until then, I'm Monica Robbins wishing you and yours good health.
Thank you so much for tuning into Health Yeah. Please find me on Twitter and Instagram at Monica Robbins. Like and follow my Facebook page, Monica Robbins WKYC. Find video podcasts at Monica Robbins' channel on YouTube. And please subscribe. Wishing you great health, and hope to see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to Health Yeah with Monica Robbins from WKYC Studios. Subscribe now so you never miss an update. And find more on everything you heard here on WKYC.com and on the WKYC app.